We need a real investigation. I don't think we have one yet.
Yes, it's true. And yes, it is a crime.
Well, thank you, Cleta Mitchell. Thank you for that explanation. Really interesting and kind of appalling.
Thank you,
really.
Tucker.
Cleta Mitchell is somebody with great courage, and she's involved with your litigation and lawsuits and all of this stuff. She literally gave up her whole practice not to get paid. She saw how corrupt it was, how disgusting it was, how dirty it was. And I want to thank you on behalf of everybody in this room and everybody in this country. You are a hell of a lawyer and tough. And that's what we need.
Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Who's Counting with Cleta Mitchell. This is a podcast about all things related to election integrity, about how elections are supposed to be run, how often they're not run the way they're supposed to be, and what we as citizens can do about it. And I'm very, very grateful today to have as my guest someone who is a citizen activist, a citizen leader, and you're going to be just amazed to learn all the things he's been doing. And I just can't wait to introduce you to him. So here is Roe Grossman, and he is one of the leaders and founders of Defend Florida. And I think you have a national organization as well, right?
Yeah, we do. It's more of a coordination effort on a national level, but in Florida, we're heavily invested in the grassroots ground level with hundreds and hundreds of active volunteers.
So Ro, tell us about you. Tell us about your background and how all the things that you've done up until this new chapter of your life.
Absolutely, yeah. So I'm just an average immigrant, actually. I was born and raised in Israel. Age of 13, I moved here. So I actually grew up as a sheep herder in the Galilee.
No kidding. Yeah. Where is that in Israel?
Galilee is northern side. So those of you who are versed with the Bible, it's by Mount Tabor.
Okay.
Growing up there, a farm boy, moving to the United States. When I moved to the United States, my parents told me, this is the land where you're going to be able to accomplish things that you're capable of. Just put your head down, plow, to use that term. Don't break the law, right. And just proceed because it's the most conducive to people like you. And I've done that.
Did your parents bring you? Did they stay in Israel?
They live here. They actually live here in Orlando.
Oh, is that right?
Yes. Yeah. So they brought us to Florida, where I went to high school, and I became a software developer.
A software developer,
and then started up a couple of tech companies in the e-commerce space.
How old were you when you did this?
In my mid-20s.
Okay.
Yeah, in my mid-20s. So at that point, you know, I saw that what my parents said was true. I applied myself. I invested in myself. I worked hard. I took risk. And then things seemed to be fine. But in 2016, I started waking up to things that I didn't understand before, just more aware of them.
Like what?
Like the fact that the United States is an amazing deficit. The fact that the system that I've been taught to thrive in, and I'm trying to teach my children to thrive in, is changing under our feet. But then 2020 happened. And 2020, earlier in the year, became really, really vivid that's happening. And then on November...
Let me stop you right there. And so early 2020, you started thinking something's not right or what?
In early 2020, when the pandemic started...
Oh, the COVID lockdown.
Yeah, the COVID lockdown, I realized I didn't quite understand. In the first month, I was like, okay, locking down, we got to figure out what it is. But afterwards, when we realized that you have a 99.9% survival rate for the most part, and why are we still locking down the whole world for that? And I started researching into the reasons. And then our cities are starting to be burnt down. And then our election become very lawless. And then looking back at it, I realized, wow, this is something that is very, very troublesome for me. And no matter how much I'm going to apply myself moving forward, what am I leaving my children? What system am I leaving them? Is what I'm teaching them how to thrive, is that going to be applicable to them in 10, 15 years? And I feel that it's not. So being a startup guy, I said, I'm going to start up something. And that's when I connected with Raj and Caroline and joined Defend Florida.
That's fantastic. About when was that?
February of last year.
February 2021.
Yeah.
So tell me about Defend Florida.
So Defend Florida is a grassroots organization. It's really a movement more than anything.
I agree with you, by the way. I think I call it the election integrity movement.
It's absolutely.
All over this country.
Yeah. And we call ourselves Defenders.
I love that.
Yeah. So we are a collection of individuals mm-hmm. who are set on fixing what's happening in the country, starting on the local level.
I agree with that. You know, I do.
Yeah. So, of course, and it's thanks to people like you, the thought leaders in the election integrity movement, that we're able to cue on it. Because remember, we're business owners, we're CPAs, we're auditors, we're teachers.
Retired law enforcement.
Retired law enforcement. Yeah. Retired. Absolutely. We love Becky. Absolutely love her. So we have a lot of disciplines within the movement. Each person brings their own talent, mm-hmm. but together with thought leaders like yourself, we can align and understand what is the importance. What does it mean that a mail-in ballot is curated?
Right.
I didn't even know what a supervisor of election was 12 months ago. So all these things that we have to catch up on, but we're very, very capable. When you put this power together, the power of the people with discipline, that nobody gets paid. There's not a single dime that gets passed. We don't collect any kind of fundraising or anything like that. And it all comes from the heart and love of country and love of God. That's when things can happen. And I think we're doing a good job in Florida so far.
Oh, I think you are too, Rob. I've just been utterly amazed with you guys. Tell everybody about some of the things, some of the projects you've undertaken so far. And believe me, I realize that we could sit here for hours, but I think the most important thing I want you to share is how you're doing what you're doing and how empowering it is, even frustrating. We'll talk about the frustrations, but I want you to talk about, because I believe so fervently that we, as individual citizens, we can save our country, but we have to get engaged. So tell people what you're doing to do that.
We're saving the country. Mm-hmm. We're going to when we are. So I have to speak from my paradigm.
Okay.
My prism is data.
Okay.
I'm a software guy. I'm a big data guy. One of my companies processes billions of data transactions with lots of data on the e-commerce space. So on a ground level, what I've done, when Raj and Caroline gave us the opportunity to participate in a realm that we want to fix in the state, I chose voter rolls.
Okay.
And the reason I chose voter rolls is the data structure with a voter roll is very similar to the data structures that I was used to in my companies with my software. And there it is. And I have to say that I had a chance to look at voter rolls and data from other states, and I have to say that Florida is fantastic when it comes to voter rolls.
Really?
When it comes to the data that you get, the ability to obtain the data, the ability to process it and make sense of it, is fantastic.
So you mean it is truly accessible to the citizens?
Absolutely.
The okay, that's good, because it's not that way in every state. You know?
I know, and I think it needs to be
it
very important.
I agree with you.
I think there's a site called VoteRef.
Gina Swoboda.
Yeah. I love her. I think what she's doing is amazing, and I think that's the kind of stuff that needs to be happening nationwide. But again, we're kind of focusing on Florida. So what we're doing, what we've done is analyze the voter rolls. We then noticed what they did in Arizona with Liz Harris and the canvassing, and we've adapted her model.
And what is that? Can you explain that?
So Liz Harris worked with a gentleman named Bobby Payton to analyze the voter rolls in Arizona after the 2020 election, and they found numerous discrepancies between what the voter rolls say and what the actual physical facts on the ground is of where somebody lives, if somebody's deceased, if they voted by mail from a particular county or not. Mm-hmm. So they found all these intricate information, but you can only get that by going and knocking on the doors. So we grab the data, we analyze it, and then we create what's called walk lists. And that's luckily that's being propagated now across the country and more citizens are doing that. But earlier on, it was really just Liz that's doing it. And I think we're the second ones actually, and in Colorado, I think they did it as well at the same time. So we use the same model. But we've deployed about 500 volunteers. We've knocked on over 26,000 voter registration doors, engaged with 14,000, and found about 5,500 irregularities in the voter rolls out of our very, very, very tiny sample size.
And what kind of irregularities would you describe?
Primarily, lack of synchronicity between the voter roll data and the actual physical state of if somebody lives in that address. But some deceased voters, we ran into a location, we call it the ballot boneyard, where we stumbled on a postal delivery man, and he mentioned when he kind of realized that we're canvassing there, he's like, I got to show you something. And he showed us how pictures of the back of his truck full of mail-in ballots that he constantly, he's been on that route for almost 30 years, and for over a decade, he's saying he's getting mail-in ballots for individuals who he knows have been deceased.
Now, are these applications, people sending applications for ballots?
Those are actual mail-in ballots.
Mailed ballots.
That they receive before an election.
From the supervisor of elections.
Right.
Sending a ballot to someone who's a known dead person.
It's known to the postman.
Yeah.
And he writes on it, this is deceased, but they keep coming back.
Over and over.
Over and over.
Not removed.
And this is what Defend Florida is doing. One of the things that Raj is, those of you who know Raj Dorsami, is really good at is diplomacy. He's the consummate diplomat. And he started this initiative last year with what I call process diplomacy. We went into and spoke with local supervisor of elections because we didn't know anything. Like I said, I didn't know what a supervisor election was. And we realized that there is, government is always behind.
Yes.
It's behind. And
it's behind in technology.
Exactly. And for somebody who comes from tech, it hurts me. It really hurts me because I know.
If we pay enough in taxes, it ought to be better than this.
Absolutely. and the thing is that we don't even need to pay more in taxes because software and technology scales processes if they're done right. So we shouldn't be afraid. We should not be afraid of technology. We should embrace it, but to make sure that it's transparent and people understand it. So tying it back to those mail-in ballots, it's not that there's some nefarious actor necessarily in the supervisor of elections office saying, I'm just gonna keep mailing these mail-in ballots. It's the process is flawed. There's gaps in the process that we've been trying to close.
So tell us a little bit about your interactions with some of the supervisors of elections. What have you said? What have you shown them? And what have they done?
So early on, there was, it was closer to 2020. So there was friction on both sides. There was some distrust, again, because of lack of us understanding the processes and them understanding our intentions.
They thought you were coming to attack them.
Yes, they thought it was confrontational. And Defend Florida, at least the meetings that I sat with Raj and other people, were never confrontational. But I'm sure they've had what I call good-hearted patriots that are misinformed about the process. Not that it's flawless, it's definitely not flawless, but there's an approach that they appreciated after a few of those meetings, and we've learned a lot. They were, what I found, if I were to profile a supervisor of election in Florida, good people. They love this country, they love this state. Many of them are leaning too heavily on the vendors to do their work, and they don't understand, this is my opinion, that many of them do not understand the inner workings because they've leaned for over a decade now, I believe, on certain vendors. Mm-hmm. They've stopped hiring, for example, database administrators.
Oh my.
Right? Because you're leaning on a vendor, but then the vendor tells you, you can't do this, this, or that, right? And then now you
have... With their product.
With our product.
Our product.
It's our vote.
Right.
It's our data as the people. And the supervisor of election is caught between the rock and a hard place many times because when we want to obtain it, Raj and I and other people that I work with, Doug and Becky, we know how to read the law and ask it for the right way. But most people,
Don't.
Yeah. And I think what we're trying to establish in Florida now is control mechanisms and a certain relationship between the supervisors and the people, where a lot of this data is proactively transparent, because a lot of interested people like me, there's probably hundreds of data people in Florida right now trying to do what we're doing together, and it's fantastic. So that was kind of like the friction in the beginning, understanding them. We even spoke with the Secretary of State. She entertained us for a couple meetings, took us very seriously. The meetings were fruitful, productive. They care. We're really lucky in Florida. The elected officials do care. A lot of them, even on the legislation, you know, their specialty is not election integrity. So we found ourselves educating some of them, but they catch up fast. So we're very lucky in Florida, actually.
So how would you say that, so you find these anomalies, irregularities, people are dead, et cetera, and they're still on the voter rolls. So what next? What are the, have some of the supervisors said, oh, I need to do something about this? Have they said, oh, we would like to, but we can't? What are they what are they telling you now?
So we've taken our findings and we provided it to supervisor of elections, but I feel that there's still distrust with a big part of them. Mm-hmm. There's also, again, I don't want to, you know, I want to speak on a personal level, that there's also an association of supervisor of elections in Florida, which I believe is not right. A supervisor of election is elected by the county in the county and is supposed to speak directly with the people of the county. And the decisions that are made in the county and the interaction with the voter should be strictly between the supervisor and the voter. But they are what I call, they formed a union. For lack of a better word, I see it as a union. And to me, that's not right. And the reason I say that is that when we do interact, a lot of times the answers that we get back is the same answer, copy paste.
All the different supervisors. So that somebody has said, just say this to these people.
Exactly. It looks very lawyered up, mm-hmm. right? And I feel that's not right. Mm-hmm. And I think the pushback that we're getting is there's just not an appetite for transparency. And I think that is the key right now.
I do too.
The key is, and again, coming back from the data, it's so much better when the data is exposed and everybody sees it, because guess what? We're going to show good things too. And even we show bad things and we're going to go fix them, because we have good people like Governor DeSantis who fixes things. Right. Then voter confidence is going to increase.
Yes, that's right.
And the number one thing that we want to do out of this here is election integrity that increases voter turnout.
Because people are confident that their vote matters and it's going to be counted, and all these other things aren't going to dilute their vote.
Exactly. And I mean, there are some very, very worrisome things that we see in the data as well. For example, signature verification on mail-in ballots is non-existent, in my opinion. It's just, they're just sending it through. Somebody looks at it, passes it through. It's non-existent. And Florida had 2.5 million mail-in ballots in 2016 mm-hmm. and 4.7 million ballots in 2020. It just jumped straight up. And when you don't verify signatures and the voter rolls
are
terrible or even mismanaged, then that's a recipe for lawless elections. And we cannot let what happened in Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, and elsewhere, Wisconsin, happen in Florida anytime soon. It almost happened in Texas, and I think they fought them hard in Texas, but Texas has a hard time as well, to my understanding, and we can't. We're putting up a permanent watchdog platform. Really, that's what we're trying to do, from data to people and so on.
We'll describe that. But when you say a permanent watchdog platform, what will that look like?
So again, we're starting with the data insights, just like a business. If you're starting a startup, you know, your investors are going to come in, show me the data, right? Show me the trends, the performance and all that. So we're going to start with that.
So what that would be, what, the voter rolls?
Voter rolls. We're in a hunt right now for what's called the maintenance logs. So when a voter transaction happens, whether they register, they request mm-hmm. a mail-in ballot, they sign a petition, they change an address, all that gets logged in the mm-hmm. system, and we're in the process of obtaining that. When you obtain that, you can see.
And that is, under federal law, supposed to be a public record.
And state law in Florida. And you cannot hide behind a vendor. Right. And that's what some of the things that are happening right now. Some of the SOEs are quoting cybersecurity or things. And again, I think it comes from misunderstandings and obstruction by the Florida Supervisor of Elections Association. I think they're the obstruction here, not the individual supervisor of election. And we really need to do something about that association. The association holds meetings, closed meetings with vendors, and they're discussing our business. Our business is our vote, election integrity. Every meeting that the FSC has with vendors or in general must be open to the public. And that's the kind of things that we want to put in a platform. So we started with voter rolls this year. We're moving on to mail-in ballots next. We have some things that we're working with a few legislators to allow us more access in August and November. We're already thinking about next January. So I personally see voter rolls and mail-in ballots as the key for integrity.
I agree with you. And you know, an interesting thing, Scott Rasmussen was my guest a few weeks ago.
I watched it. It was great.
Well,
was great.
You know, one of the things that and I don't know if you noticed this, but he said that one of the top three issues that 80% across the board, we always talk about voter ID. He said it's photo ID for every ballot, whether you cast it in person or by mail. And I know that was one of the provisions in the bill that passed the legislature, was to do a study of how to secure the absentee ballots and it using various types of things other than signature. But one thing that's not on it that I hadn't really thought about so much until I talked to Scott Rasmussen, but photo, a copy of your photo ID, your government-issued free photo ID. I hope that's something we can push, because that to me, that's better than anything else. I mean, that plus maybe a driver's license or driver's license number, last 4 years social, but that's a dual verification.
Yeah, and let's work on the fundamentals real quick. Mail-in ballots without signature verification, because we know, we established, there's no signature.
There isn't any.
0.29% of ballots. So out of the 4.7 million ballots that I told you that were cast in Florida, 13,000 were rejected.
Right.
Right?
I bet how many counties had zero rejections?
Exactly. So just statistically, it's impossible. And I believe that is a clear 14th Amendment equal protection violation.
I agree with you.
Because the person that comes in to vote in person shows that photo ID.
Correct.
The clerk looks at the person and says, that's the person. And if you sign it off a little bit, then you have an opportunity to correct it right there. The mail-in ballot, that never happens. Right. So in many cases, I believe voting in person, people are disenfranchised by this Pinellas County had 60% mail-in ballots.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, it's ridiculous and it's growing. So I think the main key when it comes to moving forward with some sort of a fix for mail-in ballots, it will take some time. Some of the things that they're talking about to do in Florida might take years. It will
like
take
what?
Your driver's license is not necessarily the most secure thing.
No, it's not.
Right? So to be able to encrypt your driver's license in a way where it is secure, but then everybody needs to get this new driver's license, and this will take years. And we have 2022 coming up. 2024 is going to be huge. And then moving forward, right? So what I believe it should be done is Florida needs to get back to what I call qualified vote by mail.
I agree with you. 100%.
You have
Everybody
to qualify.
Everybody does.
Yeah. Qualified. It's not Amazon Prime here where you get your package 2 days later. It shouldn't be because of convenience that you get your ballot.
Right.
Your right to vote is precious and you have the right to vote. Make an effort. I had somebody in Tallahassee, and you know that person, who told me, these people are driving by early voting every day where I could vote. Why don't they stop and go vote, right? They're driving by the early, it's open three weeks before. And some of the legislators, are the opponents of election integrity, what I feel like opponents of election integrity are saying, what if I miss my opportunity to send my mail-in ballot? Well, you can go early, you can go on election day. So the excuses that come from the other side, I believe, is to undermine elections, not to secure it. Or it's not even about convenience. It's about, I mean, look at what's happening in California.
Yeah, it's a nightmare.
Mail-in ballots, it's just,
it's a nightmare.
Florida cannot even get close to what California
is. No, it's a real concern. But so what do you tell people, what would you tell people that you want them to do? If they're in Florida or if they're not in Florida, what would you say that you want them to do?
I think that apathy in this country is a worse epidemic than obesity. I would like people to, every once in a while, take their head off of Instagram, stop flipping through it, and talk to people about what's happening. So open discussion. I would like people to be aware, you know, and I'm talking about not even activists, I'm talking about the general population, about the dangers of the tie-in between dirty voter rolls and vote by mail practices or malpractices or maladministration. And I want that discussion to be had without the vitriol. So I think it starts with that. For the activists, just keep acting. We've learned so much. I was just speaking to somebody here, how, you know, in 12 months, Defend Florida has really pushed a bill through.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a moment.
Yeah, so back in December when I went to Tallahassee, I was told that there's not going to be an election integrity bill. Because it's an election year and we already had SB 90 passed last year, which I agree with. But the conditions that we provided to them and shown in the voter rolls with our canvassing, and canvassing is not a perfect science, but it was good enough. So I think more than good enough to show that something had to be done. And again, thankfully, we have what we did know is that we have a governor that is that drives off empirical data. We saw how he handled COVID and how he looked at the data every day. And he sent help where help was needed. And he wasn't collectively punishing everybody by shutting down the entire state. So we used the same approach. We knew that data will drive the decisions, and we have a very powerful governor who can then, from the top down, influence the legislator and so on. We also found some key legislators. One of them is Representative Rick Roth, who I admire on a personal level, but I really admire him the way he listened and the hours that he spent on the phone with us, discussing, learning himself, teaching us, and shepherding us. So one of the most important things that I can tell people who are engaging with the legislator is that find one or two legislators who will be your Sherpas,
yeah.
Who will allow you to navigate, because you don't know the intricacies. And I know a lot of people that are in it are not political. They're just there because they want to fix the country. But it's important to understand the political creatures,
yeah.
Right? The political dynamics, because at the end, we're not here to break things. We're here to fix things. And we're not going to fix everything in one day. So you need somebody on the inside that knows the process, that is aligned. Representative Rick Roth is completely in on election integrity, but he's also cautious and careful in guiding us to make sure that we don't break things at the same time.
That's great. Well, you set a wonderful example for what it means to be an American and how we can fix things if we just get involved and engaged. And what is your website, Rob?
Defendflorida.org.
Okay.
And you can also text DEFEND to 474747 and join the movement.
Well, we appreciate so much your taking time to be with us and to tell people about what they can do, because I am all about telling people we may never have the number of entities that the left has. We will never have the hundreds of millions of dollars that the left has that they've spent on all these things that I think are intended to upend our election process. But what we have that they don't are millions of patriots,
yes,
like you. And we appreciate you.
And thank you so much for your leadership as well.
Thank you. And so that ends our episode, our wonderful interview with Rob Grossman. We invite you to share this episode. Talk to other people about getting involved in the election integrity movement. And we want you to subscribe to whoscounting.us. And we look forward to having you join us on another episode in the future. Thank you so much. Thank you for listening to Who's Counting. The Who's Counting podcast is produced by the Conservative Partnership Institute's Election Integrity Network. It is filmed and recorded at CPI Studios in Washington, D.C. Help us grow this show by sharing this episode with a friend, and be sure to subscribe and to give us a good review. We need your word of mouth, because big tech can't be trusted and tries to cancel us daily. Help fight back by visiting whoscounting.us and sign up for this podcast for our newsletter. Become part of the Election Integrity Network.